This week on RSVNB Update, the Aura Bag arrives after much community input, and we love it. Backruminal Bolts also get a much-needed update, but that's just the tip of what's possible. Also, frank discussions on 4-tick auto-attacking and old-school RuneScape versus RuneScape 3 mobile launch strategies. This is RSVNB Update, episode 655, recorded Thursday, January 25th, 2018. Now kiss. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSVNB Update. This week, Tanis and myself are back, as we are each and every week. Welcome back, Tanis.
Thank you.
Also joining us this week is Zant. Welcome back, Zant. It's been a long time Hello. Since we've heard from you.
It has been. It's good to be back here. Zant, I've been on, I think, one episode before.
Yeah,
right?
Something like that. He used to be an informer writer for us. He used to, I think, do the PVM side of things, and that's kind of what Tanis does now. So you guys are successors in that way. but you recently made a return to the game when Premier Club was announced at the end of 2017. And aside from that, in your spare time, you stream lots of Nintendo games. So I have a feeling you'll be talking about that later.
Yep.
So anyways, in that case, let's just jump right into this week's updates. This week's update is a long-awaited update by the community, and that is the Aura Bag, or as they're calling it now, the Aura Management Interface. So, how pleased were you guys when you guys saw the amount of bank space you were going to save this week?
It's nice.
Yeah. Well, and I love the functionality that they added to it. They made it, it's so much more than just a bag. I mean, no, it's the interface management, whatever. But, I mean, there's a lot more functionality than I originally thought there would be. So, that's pretty cool.
Definitely. So, basically, what we get is we get a huge new interface that just manages everything Aura-based. So, you know, like you said, Tanis, they were initially planning on just doing a bag, and this came out of last year's Game Jam, but it kept being iterated throughout the entire year based on community feedback, and lo and behold, here we are right now with this Aura Management Interface. So what you can do now is you can access all your auras that are owned and then activate them directly from this interface. You can also extend them with VizWax right from that interface as well. And you can filter it by auras that are various types, so skilling, combat, bossing, unowned as well. And you can actually purchase them right from that interface. You know, how consequential do you guys think this is? Because this is a pretty big update, I think.
Well, a couple of things. One, I mean, it goes to what we were talking about last week with how far is this going to go, or updates like this going to go with doing a bank rework.
Exactly.
Doing a bank rework.
Yeah.
On top of that, to be able to, like, having to be able to use the VizWax, and you can reset your aura too. Like, if you want to use your Reaper points, if it's on cooldown, and reset it, you can do that too. So that's like, that's so much packed into that space. It almost makes you go, gee, if these could have been designed a little bit differently in the beginning, you might not have had to do all of this, but I think it's great.
It just seems like this is something we should have had from the start with auras.
Right?
They've always been a bit of a hassle with the bank, but this, it puts them all in one place, and it just makes sense. And it almost begs the question, should auras have even really been designed as an equipable? That's what I'm kind of wondering with this.
And, you know, I think that's actually a very good question, because I think when they came out, they were designed to be things that, you know, you would only have a few of them maybe. And now we have such a huge amount of them that it has just become an issue with storing them in the bank. And that's what led to this interface. So in some ways, I don't think there was the foresight to see that it would come down to this. But maybe that's just the way the game has evolved over time, because, you know, I'm thinking we only had a specific set of auras in the beginning, but at the end of the day, now we have just so many, and people want to have access to all these without needing to bank, whether they be out on a combat slayer task or out doing some kind of skilling or something. It's just nice to have access to all of them. And, You know, I am going to make a wager out there, and I'm going to say it was probably easier when Auras came out to implement them as individual items and, you know, create the Aura slot for that rather than making a whole brand new interface. Because recall when these came out, I think when we had the first batch of loyalty points somewhere around the year of 2010, I want to say, give or take, we did not have the new interface for the game, which... The old interface
wasn't. I didn't even think about that.
The old interface wasn't as extensible, and it wasn't as easy to create new floating windows like you have with the Aura management, for example. So that could have also been playing a role in that as to why we didn't get that. So, and you can also mark them as favorites. So, you know, if you have a specific set of auras that you use for your day-to-day tasks, some might be skilling, some might be combat, you can just mark them as favorites and have access to all of them right there. Now, people saved lots of bank space with this. And, you know, we have been talking about this on and off ever since we heard that there was going to be a bank taster coming. Now, with the Diango and the POH access that we're going to be getting later this year, and now this, it really begs a question for 2 weeks in a row: is a bank rework needed? Aside from the placeholders, I still say no.
You know, and I definitely lean towards that, but I guess there's one more thing to really think about, though, is how many more interfaces like this could they implement to save bank space and to reduce clutter and to make things easier and more streamlined for us? Because I feel like there are more things. I can't think of them right now. I don't know if you can. There you go. Scrimshaws is another one. Yeah.
Sigils.
Sigils would be a really good one. Yeah.
There's a ton of outfits that they could even put into the wardrobe interface as well.
Yeah, you could move things around.
Like, they could eventually just put... I guess somehow make all equipables just to their own interface, theoretically. I don't think that would happen, but that is something that I feel like could happen.
Yeah, because when you think about it, what is a bank? Like, what is the definition of the word bank? The definition of the word bank, and I'm just going to indulge you guys with this, providing an actual definition here, since I'm trying to make a point, is that... Okay, we don't want a riverbank. Thank you. Thank you, dictionary. okay, obviously it's not in the first few here. Electrical bank? Okay. I guess we have just started calling the vault the bank, even though the actual term we're looking for is probably a vault in terms of, you know, storing things that we want to keep safe, and that's what a bank is designed for, I think, in the real world, is that it's a place where you store things that you might need to use at a later date. But at the same time, if you are wanting to activate various effects and whatnot, like you said, you could just have some kind of token on your account that says, I have a tier 85 tank plate body. I want to equip that. And, you know, it would be a major departure from the way the game works, but it would reduce the amount of inventory space in the bank that's taken up if essentially items all became like the keepsake. But, you know, at that point, I think we might be heading towards something that oddly parallels a bank rework. So I don't know if that would be a positive way to progress internally or not. But
could you imagine people would think the sky is falling, there's nothing is of value anymore, and the economy will crash, and, you know, I could hear the doomsday.
Yeah, but I mean, you would still be able to pull the items out to trade them.
Oh, you would?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
You and probably wouldn't need something because of the with invention and the different, you know, augmentables.
Right. And invention is another thing right there. They could have made us store all of the raw materials and components in our bank, but instead they created that invention interface.
Yeah, that is a very good point. And they could have probably even extended that more to actually include other components of invention in there as well, like maybe gizmos and such.
Well, and here's the sad thing. I think that we're pretty much in agreement. I think we're pretty much right that if you were to add placeholders and then to continue on the same path that they have been going on with future content or whatever, we wouldn't need a bank rework. Right. But are people ready to hear that, or are they going to kick and scream and say, Jagex promised us the bank rework. Damn it.
Right.
They didn't deliver.
And I mean, one of the other arguments I hear for bank rework, aside from placeholders, is more tabs. But how many tabs do you actually need? We have got along just fine with the 10 or 12 tabs that we have right now in the bank.
And to be honest, are placeholders even a thing that is really needed outside of like armors and stuff? Because most items, you're going to have stacks of them anyways. Like the only tab on my bank I think I'd really need placeholders for is like the combat and armor tab. It's like, because, you know, it's always going to be disorganized if you have one of each, you know?
Both of those, like, I actually could use. I mean, I could use a few more tabs. Actually.
It would be nice, but for the effort it would probably take them to actually, like, didn't they say it was some kind of crazy thing that they had to do to get placeholders working?
I don't remember
the specifics.
If we had to, placeholders, that to me would be a really big deal, just because how nice would it be to be able to have an organized bank? It's just such a pain right now. If you take anything out, you have to have duplicates of everything. And if not, then everything just gets messed up. And that's really hard to do with your armor and stuff. And I would love to have placeholders if that is a possibility.
That's why since the beginning of time, I've always bought two of each skill cape. Yeah, right.
There are certain items that we cannot buy two of.
Yeah, and especially for items that are degradable. So you got your most of the high-end armor nowadays.
Yeah. All right, well, that's the aura bag. And I mean, like I said, I knew this would spur a discussion on the bank and the aura bag. Granted, we did take that detour. This is an update that, you know, is what I classed as coming into 2018, something Jagex needs to do. They need to put out updates that are meaningful. They need to put out updates that the community likes, and they need to put them out without any technical or quality problems to them. And that's what I think the Aura interface is this week that we got.
There are some bugs, but...
Oh? I didn't notice them.
Well, they were really, really niche kind of bugs.
There was one. Yeah. Right. There was one. If you had an aura equipped, you would reflect damage in the wilderness to whoever attacked you.
Yeah.
Right. I remember that one.
Yeah. That probably was found by a warband group, I would imagine. You know, but it wasn't that bad. But yeah, there was a few little bugs.
But nothing that is major, and I'm going to cite two updates that I'm saying updates this year cannot come out like, and that is one, the achievement system, and two, Shattered Worlds.
These are small bugs, not base design choices.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's where stuff like the achievement interface kind of flops, whereas this, it's just small bugs that are going to be ironed out.
That's right. I don't think there's much else to say about it. It works as intended. It works well, and I think everyone's largely happy about it, so I don't think there's much else we need to say on this. It's there.
Just one final thought. Keep taking your time. They took their time with this one.
Yes.
It could have came out
Could have came out in August when they finished the initial version of it, but no.
This could have just been a bag you throw all your auras into.
Yeah. This is what we get when we wait, and it's good.
It's worth it.
Get it right. Yeah, it's worth it.
All right. Well, next up is the Enchanted Becriminal Bolts. Now, you know, you gotta admire what Jagex does for this. And when these bolts were in game since 2012, the initial Becriminal Bolts, they were a tier 80 ranged ammunition choice that you could use, and the downside of them was that they had a mid 70 tier damage value to them, which, I mean, at this point in the game, who wants to use that, really? Come on. There's no point for that in game. I think this was probably one of the last updates that arrived before EOC came out, if I remember correctly. So that was definitely on the radar at the time, something that would work for non-EOC and EOC alike, and would not have the foresight of designing purely for EOC. Now, with that being said, Jagex says, and I quote, "We had a Now Kiss moment," of course, referring to that that meme on the internet, Now Kiss. And I'm assuming they're referring to the fact that they could make the bolts work correctly with the bolt tips. That would be my guess of what's going on here. Jagex putting those two together and making them kiss and make up and have a nice combination that's coming out here with that. So tier 95 range damage and tier 99 or level 99 ranged requirement to equip these. Very powerful. Unfortunately, as it is right now in game with everything that we have, there is no weapon in game that will be able to take advantage of the full damage potential that these have based on the way the damage formula works. Even if you have your Ascension crossbows, you will be out of luck for getting the maximum amount of damage from these weapons. So
we can couch it out as well. If once the tier 92 crossbows come out, it's going to be the same thing as well.
Yeah. So basically what this means is we are here doing this for the effects of these. Now, there are 11 gems that you can tip these bolts with, and they're all fairly niche effects. I think in our discussions there's a few that definitely stood out to us, but let's just run down the list. Did you guys want to jump to any of your favorites first?
I believe the rubies are pretty nice. I remember way back when pre-EOC, they were used actually quite often, even though they didn't have too high damage.
That's right.
Enemies like Corporeal Beast, you'd always have people using them at Corporeal Beast, because even though you're not going to hit Corporeal Beast with these at all, when you got the ruby hits, it was worth it. Like, you were doing some massive damage, and I feel like these will definitely have a place in PVM for some of the higher life point monsters.
And but I mean, you can even... you can even use the diamond ones too, but we'll get to those.
Yeah.
So, all right. So the ruby ones are effectively what I'd like to call the spiritual successor of the old ruby gems. This is called Blood Forfeit. You have a 5% chance to deal damage worth 20% of your enemy's life points. So if they have 10,000 life points, that's 2,000 damage, while also dealing 10% of your own life points to yourself. Damage dealt to players caps at 3,000. For NPCs, the percentage of damage dealt scales down linearly as the NPC loses health, capping at 10,000 and 12,000 for critical hits. Capping at 10,000 damage.
Yeah.
Furthermore, the chance to trigger this effect lowers by 1% for every 1 million of the NPC's remaining health, capping at a minimum of 1%. So, as you can see here, I mean, that's something you can definitely, you can heal through here if you do this. Because if you have, 9,900 life points, 10% of that is only 990, and that's easy to heal through when you're attacking. So when that hits, that's a fairly decent sacrifice if you're fighting something that is so huge, right?
So, honestly, if you have a soul split active during that as well, you'll probably heal that all right back up.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So ruby ones are definitely up there. Next, I think we talk about the diamond option here, and that's armor piercing. 5% chance to hit with 100% accuracy and deal up to 15% more damage. Now, this goes back to the discussion we had 2 weeks ago regarding the Hex Hunter bow, because we talked about, the Hex Hunter bow is good, but people are only going to use it for Slayer, where that kind of accuracy isn't needed. But if you are fighting critters that have high defense, as you are when you PVM, hitting with 100% accuracy is something you want to do, because that's going to mean you're going to deal more damage.
Yeah, and when that new boss comes out, I mean, it's really going to come into its own, because it'll be tier 92 on the crossbows.
Yeah.
And with those with the added accuracy of these diamond bolts, it could be the go-to. It could be like the next big, next big thing that you have to use, or you can't be in our group.
Yeah, well, we'll get to something on that matter in just a bit. Dragonstone is Dragon's Breath, 5% chance to hit your opponent. A second time for 25% of your current attack is Dragonfire. So it's only 25%, but it is Dragonfire, so there will be very little resistance on that attack. So that's good. Of course, it doesn't work on dragons and people who are immune to Dragonfire, which is to be expected. Do you guys see any people using this one? I mean, this seems like a good Slayer one to me.
Yeah, I would try it.
It seems pretty nice. It seems to be kind of just like the diamonds with the damage increase, except for it doesn't have the accuracy increase.
Yeah, so you'd use this where you don't need the accuracy increase.
Yeah, and you just want that extra power.
Yeah.
Well, I just noticed a El Cheapo here, Shane, with the opals. Because you know how, I mean, opals are like nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it costs nothing, and you got a 5% chance to do 10% more damage. I mean, that might be like a nice little something to keep with you when you're doing Slayer.
Yeah, that's another good one right there.
Yeah.
Rounding out the high-tiered ones, Life Leech with Onyx, 10% chance to heal up to 25% of damage potential, capping at 2,500, and dealing 25% more damage. So this one seems kind of like a tank power, I'd guess, if you're doing a ranged tank, if that's at all feasible. Though you need to be close normally for that. So, I don't know. Maybe. Hydrix. Now, we were laughing about this before the show because currently a Hydrix gem is going for 20 million unless you get these tips dropped from Task.
Oh, yeah. Let's just cut up a Hydrix and make some bolts.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Death
Mark. I wonder how many you get.
10 but, one yeah. Yeah, it's like
on
11
the exchange
or 12 or
right
something.
Now, I believe the actual bolts, they're like 12,000 each right now. Yeah, I don't want to be shooting those.
yeah, and here's what you get.
Throwing GP at the enemies.
Here's what you get for that price. 10% chance to instantly provide 10% adrenaline and an additional 1% of adrenaline from basic attacks for 15 seconds.
That's
terrible.
Wow. That's like worse than almost of these, and it's the most expensive.
Why would you fire that?
That is a dumbass test. Hey, let's see how dumb people could possibly be. Like, there is no reason you would.
Question. Did Hydrix tipped? Yeah, there was a Hydrix effect for bolts before this update, right?
No, there wasn't.
There was not. Interesting.
Wait, I thought those were the, like, incendiary or. Remember, because the gemstone armor, you could have an effect of. Gemstone tips, I thought.
Oh, it was the Ascendry ones, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that one.
That's right.
Yeah, they're tipped Ascension bolts.
Which, I mean, is,
which
I guess.
Those are tier 90.
Yeah, those are tier 90. And they could use.
And they're still 9.6k each.
Yeah. 10% chance to activate Deathmark. It's the same effect. So this is the same effect that...
So that did exist before. Okay.
Yeah, this effect did exist before. Okay, so some of the lower ones, we like Opal, 5% chance to perform 10% more damage. You know, another great cheap one right there.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely something you might want to do instead of just using the standard Royal Bolts. Jade gives you Earth's Fury, 5% chance to stun your opponent for 4.8 seconds. Only binds in PvP. PvP specific bolt. Anyone? Any takers?
Nah.
All right.
Rad Topaz, down to earth, 5% chance to reduce your opponent's magic level by 2 and damage by 1%, caps at 10 levels and 5% damage. You know, that's not very much, but could find a niche in some support categories, I guess. If you're fighting a damage based boss, you bring one person with this. Maybe. If it's going to last long enough.
1%, though.
Yeah, but it caps at 5%.
Oh, so it can...
It can stack.
It can stack, okay.
Yeah. Pearl gives you seeks... Oh, sorry, you want to say something on that?
Stacks if you manage to roll it again, I'm assuming. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and with 5% chance, I think based on the numbers, if you're attacking every couple seconds, You should probably get one of these hits every 20 seconds or so.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the numbers, I think, preliminarily in my head, I might be wrong. Pearl gives you Sea Curse, which is 5% chance to perform 15% more damage to enemies that are weak to water, performs 15% less damage on enemies that are weak to fire, stops enemies from running in PvP.
That is really niche.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool. I don't know, but this would be like, I want to see more stuff like this.
Let's see. So if we go category weak to water spells, we have Black Demons.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Earth Warriors. Gargoyles, Hellhounds.
Seems to be gargoyles, huh?
Goblins,
mid-level Slayer stuff.
Yeah.
Imps, Jogers, Kalphites, Lesser Demons.
Including Kalphites, does that mean corrupted ones or whatever they are? The ones in the King's Lair.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all Kalphite. They're the same thing. Yeah. So probably.
So I know these are some pretty decent Slayer XP, if I remember correctly.
Ogres. Rock Lobsters, if you want to farm those red charms down there. Yeah, not seeing too much else on this list here. Oh, the Tazar creatures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They'd be useful for the caves.
Yeah, there you go. So that's an option right there. Oh, yeah, and weak to fire. I don't know who would be weak to fire, but hey.
You're probably not going to be using these against them anyways.
Yeah. Clear Mind, 5% chance to steal 5% of your opponent's maximum prayer with the Sapphire Tip Bolts. I mean, this would be good if you paired it with a Demon Horn Necklace, for example, but I don't know if this is something you would want to dedicate an entire bolt tip to.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, probably not. And then Emerald is Magical Poison, 55. I'm guessing this is a typo because it says 55% chance to poison your enemy for 4% of your weapon damage, and everything else is 5%. So I'm going to say 5% chance to poison your enemy for 4% of your weapon damage, and that's on Emerald. So I think for Slayer, then we want to say that Opal...
No, 55 is correct.
Whoa.
I just looked on the wiki. Yeah, that sounds about right from what I remember. I remember there was actually a very niche use for the Emerald Bolts. I remember before EOC, Corporeal Beast stunning the little core that flies around. You could, if you got a poison off on one of them with the bolts, it wouldn't move around and sap damage from people. So it was a really niche use, but that's kind of useless nowadays. People just AoE it down now.
All right. So for Slayer, I think we got Opal with Lucky Lightning for the 5% to perform 10% more damage. Potentially Pearl if you're fighting something that's weak to water. Emerald for Magic Poison. And Dragonstone for Slayer. That's what I'm going to say is going to be the Slayer-focused ones. PVM bossing-wise, maybe Red Topaz... definitely Ruby, definitely Diamond, perhaps Onyx, and Hydrix seems to be the red-haired stepchild here that no one wants.
Yeah.
So
didn't want it before, didn't make it better this time.
So yeah, there we go. I guess this is a reason to get 99 range to use these weapons if you don't already have it, because, I mean, why not for some of these effects? So...
This update really does seem to fit into that whole ideology that they have nowadays, trying to create more niche items so you can have more variety to your combat.
Yes,
I really
definitely.
Like that. And that,
you know, for the first 3 or 4 years of EOC was one of the major complaints, is that every weapon is the same and there's no point to use anything else.
People would just use what's the best thing and it would use it everywhere. But now we have so much more diversity, and that's really being highlighted with this update.
And now the problem that comes from this is that how do you bring the same level of diversity to melee?
Or even with
or even magic
arrows. Arrows.
We can tip arrows, right?
Well, not with these. Not with these. These are specifically bolts. Right.
You could add more, but you could add more bane.
True.
More bane tips.
And they could have more special bows like the Zarite bow, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So I think arrows will be fine, actually, thinking about it.
I'm going to be honest, though. Like, I've used an oxbow for the longest time, but I almost want to pick up ascensions for this. This seems right? really nice. Yeah.
And, I mean, the accuracy the amount of accuracy you're going to suffer from this going from tier 92 for the Noxbow down. Or is Noxbow tier 92? I thought it
was 90. Okay, the Saren Godbow is 92. All right. And actually, the Saren Godbow is tanking pretty hard right now.
Well,
but it's tanking for max, so.
Yeah. It seems to be. This just gives you another reason to not use it.
I agree. So, what do we do for melee in this case, guys? What do we do?
Well, I think you can do the same effects on different weapons. So you could do an effect on a maul, some kind of a heavy hitting type of thing. You could do an effect for a claw, for a rapier, a longsword, different things like that. That are all going to be relatively close to the same damage. You know, within their tiers, they will be relatively close to the same damage and same accuracy, but within their tiers, you could have different uses for different weapons.
Yeah.
Which would make sense.
You know what I want to see come out either before or after the mining and smithing update, but probably after at this point, would be these pieces that you can add on to your, you know, tier 90 weapons to add these effects to them. And I am going to be completely honest with you here. This is going to be a perfectly good point to appropriate those old god swords.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good point.
I mean, leave the god swords at tier 75 where they are, but allow people to hit them with a hammer or do something with the smithing skill to get a part out of them and put that on some of these weapons because, you know, the Bando special, the Armadil special, Ceridoman special, all these special attacks in the original god swords are stuff that people want to use at high tier, but there's just no point to do it because the weapons are so low. So if we're going to be looking at diversifying melee like this, that has to be something that is looked at here. Not necessarily as the main update, but maybe something as the cherry on top.
Tie that right into the mining and smithing rework.
Yeah, that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Maybe altering effects you can do with, or not effects, special attacks on your weapons.
Though unfortunately, I think the mining and smithing rework as it is right now is just a revamp to the way that the system works.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad. But yeah, that's the bolts. I mean, level 99 ranged requirement is pretty steep, but hey, I mean, it's worth it when you're getting something that is going to be tier 95 range damage. Though I don't know why they would have put it at tier 95 range damage if even the new Solak crossbows that are coming out are going to be something that you're going to, you know, not be able to take full advantage of the damage with, right?
Even with melee kind of lacking this diversity we get from things like this, isn't melee kind of advantage in the fact that it has basically double the amount of abilities from both attack and strength? I've never understood that.
Well, yeah, it's not.
It just does not make sense to me. And that ties way back into attack and strength versus just having one melee skill.
Yeah. But and I mean, I think there was discussions had at some point about merging them, but I don't think that got anywhere because there would have been, you know, too much. It would have been a very hard thing to do, I think. Harder than EOC. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that would create a lot of bad stuff in the community.
Yeah. So. All right. Just as a little bit of a tidbit here, you need level 98 magic to enchant the Onyx bolts. So these are high-tiered weapons because you do also need level 98 fletching to be able to create them. So very powerful. Very powerful. And, you know, this is going to give high-level fletchers something to do, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, and you need level 99 gonads to go out there in the wild and cut you some bloodwood too.
I thought there was a tree that you didn't need to go into the wilderness for.
I think you're right, yeah.
Let's see, the bloodwood trees are
Might be in that dungeon in Prif. Is that
I think there I want to say there's one in like the
Yeah, there's one in the Garajo dungeon, and you also get access to one in Darkmire after you complete that quest.
Yeah.
So, oh, and one in Soul Wars as well. So, I mean, there are three in the wilderness that you can go to if you want.
You're going to get those bloodwood logs and making these with them. That's basically pure profit for Fletchers.
Yeah,
I believe so.
And you know, in some ways, I wish I wasn't so intent on leveling up invention this week, or else I would have done that, because I was you know, just in that, you know, in that. That sense when you're training and you just want to get to that next level. That's what I was in this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Invention. And I realized by the time it was too late, oh, I could have dedicated this time to get 99 range this week and go make these bolts. Oh, I should have done that. So unfortunately I didn't do that, but nonetheless, I think these bolts are going to be pretty, pretty good. So
welcome to the grind, my friend.
Overall, two great updates this week. We're going to move on to the patch notes right now. Some very interesting things this week in the patch notes. And I'm going to start off with something that is a little bit absurd that most people might not get. And Jagex didn't exactly clarify on what these flags do. So the first patch note for the week is compiler flags have been improved for Windows builds.
That means nothing to me. I have no idea
exactly
what any of that means.
If I was to take an educated guess on this, this would mean that they have tweaked the way they compile their code so that it will be either compile faster or it will compile it more efficiently, so it'll run more efficiently for us. That would be my guess as to what this is about. Next up, hit marks are now able to display different colors in the NXT client. Remember, sometime in 2017, they added the option somewhere in the settings to change your hit markers to be whatever color you want. Apparently, that feature wasn't working in NXT for a while.
I didn't even know that was a feature.
Yeah, see? I mean, it's way deep in the settings. How are you going to know it's a feature? So,
I don't think I'd even want to change them, to be honest.
No, it makes zero sense to do that because they all mean something different, you know?
So. Yeah, exactly. Like we've come to get used to this this color scheme for what each different color means. You know, purple means heal, red means you took damage, green poison. Changing that would really throw you off, I feel.
Yep, that's right.
Unless you can't see,
get used to it
very well.
Yeah.
Oh, Tanish, were you using this feature?
No, actually, I haven't because I normally just see the red ones anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That does seem like a nice accessibility feature, though.
Yeah.
All right, we'll give them that. RAM usage has been optimized for Grand Exchange searches, though they don't say how much. The memory footprint for the location system was reduced by 10 megabytes, as well as the interface system memory was cut down by another 15 megabytes. And as you can see here, that's 25 megabytes in savings. And the reason you do this is if you're trying to optimize a game for mobile when that's coming out.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So we all benefit.
Exactly.
Nice.
Items no longer appear invisible in players' inventories and banks.
Thank you.
So was this all the time or was it just random?
It was just, I think, kind of random. It's happened quite a lot over the past few weeks. I had a situation where my Nox bow was invisible and that's scary.
Oh,
I thought I'm lost.
Oh. I've been hacked. Been hacked, guys. Help.
My issue is that anytime I open my bank now, all the icons have to load in. It's almost as if the caching has been disabled on those for some reason. I don't know why that's happening. Anyone else having that experience?
I don't believe so.
Oh, that's weird. All right. The cherry tree hotspot in the player-owned port now uses a cherry tree model instead of a maple tree. I guess we can do that now since we have cherry trees in the arc. Broken windows were fixed on the first floor of Lumbridge Castle. Some windows were also adjusted in the Falador Gem Store. and a height mapping issue, which was causing a dip in the ground south of the Anil, has been fixed. Nice. The roof above and upper level balcony in Laledia will now appear correctly when the remove roof setting is toggled on. Excellent.
There's a situation with that in Prif that gets kind of annoying. If you're actually in the top of the Tower of Voices, you can like see the inner parts of some of the geometry on there.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I hope they address that at some point, because that's been there, I think, since NXT was launched.
Huh. All right.
I'll have to report that.
Yeah, that could be a geometry issue.
Yeah.
The roof in the Yanel Wizards Guild Tower will now correctly remove when the remove roof setting is toggled on. And the giant ant bonus to harvesting fruit trees now works correctly in combination with the farming skill cape perk or a patch bomb. So that means, I guess, that you can now get more directly from your ant, and it'll automatically note them with your farming skill cape perk. All right, this one. We thought we saw the end of this one, but it's back this week.
Oh, no.
Splitting 5 kilogram blocks of granite, it was sandstone last week, into 500 gram pieces, now gives 10 pieces instead of 12.
So the patch that they did last week...
Where's that extra kilogram come from?
Well, I mean, last week it was sandstone, now it's granite.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm kind of surprised they didn't catch that when they did the sandstone, because those things are so similar.
Yeah, well...
Weird kind of you never really know. Niche mining.
Players can now buy damaged god books from Jossic before completing each of the prior books. You guys remember back in the day you had to complete all the books, but now you just purchase them. And, you know, these are something I think that, you know, they're magic offhands now. I don't know many people who use them because of their low level, but they definitely do provide a good option for mid-level players. So that's something people should look at if they've never looked at it before.
Are they offhands? I thought these went in pocket slot now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, they are pocket slots.
Yeah. And then there's some new thing you can do with them to get some bonuses.
Yeah, the pages do different. Yeah. Different gods have different
right.
effects.
Right, they all have different effects. I remember talking about this when they released it.
Yeah, it's charge based or something like that. Then you have to use pages.
Oh, okay, yes, it is. It is charge based, and that did keep the
kept the price of the pages up pretty well.
Okay, you guys are right. It is indeed pocket. Nice. All right.
And even if you don't have the charges for that, just having it in there, just some prayer bonus. It's just something if you don't have anything else in the pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I mean,
it's got any of those sitting around.
That's definitely something that I think people should look at doing again.
I think we've all got effects. At least one or two of those just sitting in our bank.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, this is another way of augmenting damage, kind of the same way we're doing with the bolts. So, all right, very good. Next up, players can now use magic notepaper on dragon plate skirt, plate legs, square shields, kite shields, full helmets, and plate bodies. I don't know why you wouldn't have been able to do that before, but there you go.
I've always wanted to note my dragon full helm.
Especially when you're out on the middle of a task, right?
Yeah, especially when you're doing the pyre ship and you manage to roll it. Ooh. Gotta note that, you know?
Oh, right. I guess you can get that. I forgot about that. Did you get from there?
I have never gotten one from there.
Okay. All right. I just don't see the point
of using that with notepaper. That's not something you're going to get multiple of a task, I don't think. That's a really rare item.
It is really rare in that regard.
I guess just for consistency's sake.
Yeah, and that's good.
Yeah.
The display overhead target information was rewritten in order to fix an issue with the background layer becoming transparent unintentionally. This rewrite also helps improve the responsiveness and accuracy of the health bar. So this is another huge PVM update, something that's not really thought about that much, but, you know, it has become transparent in the past for me, and that's now fixed. And I've never noticed the health bar being inaccurate. Have you guys?
No.
Don't believe so.
Okay. Fair enough then. A help button has been added to the world map, and the world map opening tutorial is now only one page long, as the tutorial can now be repeated by using the help button on the map. That's good. We don't really need a long tutorial for the world map. I think if you have a world map tutorial that's more than a page long, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
So. Icons have been added to the world map for goblin raids and demon flash mobs in the style of the Wildeworm, and this feature can be hidden using the Doomsayer toggle system.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I've never felt the appeal for demon flash mobs and whatnot, but hey, there it is.
You know, those titles are still pricey.
Yeah, they are.
All right.
I know, because I had to buy the Deacon when I got 120 prayer.
There was a point in time I was actually going for quite a few of those.
Fascinating.
People still do them.
Yeah. I mean, why not if there's a chance of getting that huge drop?
Yeah.
So, dwarf multi-cannons now jam where they previously decayed, and players can now repair the cannon in this state to reactivate it without needing to rebuild it. It will be destroyed as before if not repaired within 20 minutes. So this is an accessibility update to cannons that basically means that, you know, if the cannon stops working, it's not going to decay into its pieces and you need to pick it up. So it gives you more time to get out there and repair it. Though I don't know who uses cannons at this point.
There are some good uses for cannons.
Oh.
Still. Yeah, I mean, like, if you're doing Slayer comp or something like that, and you take a cannon out there to some Aerits, I mean, you can fly through those tasks really quick. Now you got to put some good armor on, have you a Vamp Scrimshaw and either a Penance or a Vamp Aura. But, yeah, you can really get through those tasks really quick.
All right, fair enough. And feedback messages for the Dwarven Multicannon now appear as information boxes. Good to know.
Okay.
All right. So that's it for the patch notes this week, unless you guys have any other ones.
Nope.
That's about it.
All right. So, you know, we weren't going to initially discuss this, and I think we should discuss it very quickly and just mention that it's there if you want to do it. But the Faceless Assassins Treasure Hunter promotion is out, and this is another one of those matrixes that you get when you open Treasure Hunter and you need to complete various tasks in order to unlock the thing, or you can get the tokens to free unlock them on Treasure Hunter. You know, I don't do these ones. I threw my parchment out as soon as I got it, so that's why I forgot to include it in the show. Thank you, Tanis, for adding it back in. But if you complete all 16 tasks on this Assassin's Contract, you unlock the full outfit in blue. Then if you prestige and recomplete it multiple times, you unlock more color options. I don't know who's going to do this. I mean, you can do it with keys, obviously, but come on.
A common theme with this one as well seems to be like they're trying to get people to do some of the dead content in this game.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to go do 15 laps of the Werewolf Agility course. I'm sorry.
No. It's like, do you like homework? Do you not get enough homework in school? Well, Jagex has a solution for you.
Go make yourself some tangled toad legs.
That's right. do some werewolf agility.
I mean, some of these on here aren't too bad, but I'm not doing werewolf agility. I'm sorry. That's the no.
Yeah, you know, five medium dunge floors. I mean, Shane will be the first to jump on that. I mean,
No, not happening. Not happening.
See, you have the Dungeoneering connoisseur in this call with you right now, so.
Oh, really?
I love Dungeoneering.
Okay. So are you going to do the medium floors then, five of them?
I probably will.
Really?
I actually think I have one of the daily tasks right now, too.
But that's for a large.
I think you can. Can you not do a large for the? Yeah, it says medium or large.
Okay, well, there you go. Oh, I don't want that. Oh. Okay. All right. Anything else on that? I mean, I don't want to talk much about it. Okay, thank you. Moving on. So
Jane just seems done. No Dungeoneering talk here.
Well, I mean, we've done it before. If we have to for an update. Four-tick auto-attacking. Yeah.
Take it away, Professor.
Four-tick auto-attacking is something that was talked about a lot at RuneFest, and at the combat talk was something that was brought up by various concerned PVMers in the audience at RuneFest. I actually remember that being brought up, and basically what we got here today is a statement from ModPy, who was one of the JMods at that combat talk, and he said, you know, he doesn't want to comment unless he has something new to add. Otherwise, he sounds like a broken record. And it was intended that the last time they talked about Fortick auto-attacking would have been at RuneFest. However, now quoting from the posting here, the power and concerns over Fortick auto-attacking have been gradually increasing and you have been asking for answers. Every other Friday, the Combat Council gets together to discuss hot topics, and last Friday, the current state of Fortick auto-attacking was on the agenda, and the state of it has evolved since we spoke at RuneFest. So, basically, now, quick rundown of what Fortick auto-attacking is. Fortick auto-attacking is an abuse of the tick system in-game. A tick in-game in RuneScape, for those unaware, runs at 0.6 seconds. So, that's why things in-game cannot be done on the increment of 1 second, because we only have the resolution of a tick, and the closest you can get to that is 2 ticks, which is 1.2 seconds. So now that we know what a tick is, basically take into mind that when you're attacking and you're auto-attacking, that happens every 4 ticks, or 2.4 seconds, if you're using a weapon that has a dual-wield attack speed on it. Whereas if you're using a slower weapon, like a two-hander, that is 6 ticks, or 3.6 seconds. So basically what the 4-tick auto-attack does is it allows you to leverage the tick system to equip weapons and get an extra attack in while the other weapon is cooling down, essentially. So the example given here by the RS Wiki is that you are using spells, and you're using a wand, orb, and a staff. So what you do with this is you put a spell on the action bar and key bind it to something, and you want to be able to access that key very quickly. So then you use an ability with dual wielding weapons. So any of your abilities that you so want to use with dual wielding weapons. After you do that, as we know, those weapons will go on a global cooldown and you won't be able to attack. So with that global cooldown, after that's done, people can wait 1 tick and then use the spell that's on their keyboard and fire that off at the same time. And all of this is done because in that same time that you're waiting for that to go off cooldown, you equip a staff as well, and then that staff fires off that magic attack with the staff bonus. So basically what you're doing is you're attacking like you normally do with your dual-wielding weapons. You're taking a tick to equip a staff, then you're firing that attack off, and then you're putting your dual-wielding weapons back on. So in a way, you're shuffling weapons so quickly that combat becomes a case of who can master the interface the fastest. Now, I'd like to take everyone back in time to 2012 before EOC came out. And one of the core objectives with EOC when that came out was to ensure that combat would be something that everyone was able to access on the same level and not how quick you could abuse the RuneScape interface. Now here we are in 2018 and 4-tick auto-attacking is a problem, much the same way we had problems before EOC came out. Now, I'm going to talk about what Jagex is going to do with this and what the current problem is in game, but I'm going to say from my own personal perspective, and you guys can feel free to chime in with this, is that if there is something like this in game and it's being exploited, I don't know why it was being exploited so long without it being patched up. That's not in the spirit of what EOC was designed as. As soon as this was discovered, they should have put something in to stop it, but they didn't. And that's how we get to where we're at today. So what do you guys think about this?
Well, I think this is definitely something that needed to be addressed. Things like this really do bring me back to before EOC, when there was a whole bunch of things kind of like this where, you know, combat was basically interface navigation. And this really feels like that. It feels like that creeping up on us once again with, you know, a fully fledged out combat system that we have today. But this is such a it seems like such a niche thing. And it just gives you an extra auto attack, basically. But the problem with this is that over time, the elitism in the PVM community is going to basically lead to you're going to basically have to know how to do this in order to get a PVM Bingo. Team. Yeah, it's going to create just a really big power creep to the point where this is going to become the norm.
Yeah. And that's what Jagex addressed here They say prior to RuneFest, it was something only the elite were using, and the numbers were cited were a 7% DPS increase. And they agreed that in that state, it was not something that they wanted to officially support due to its obscurity and exclusivity between the styles. They did see a high value in the mechanical skill-based DPS increase, and the difference at the time was comparable to a style having a top-tier weapon equivalent and other styles waiting for theirs to release theirs. So since the DPS increase was modest, we prefer not to take away your toys, and the skill ceiling raising gameplay was desirable. We decided to keep it in game until we could find a suitable replacement, and we could offer a comparable gameplay to the other styles. Now that I disagree with. It should have been patched relatively quickly. What do you guys think?
Same here. I don't think leaving this in the game does any good, really. It's just led this issue progress even further, because before it was just a thing that like the elite PVMers did, but now it's slowly creeping to be like I said earlier, it's creeping to be closer to a norm, and it's gotten closer to that point since it's been in game for longer.
Yeah, definitely. And now here we are. After RuneFest and after it came to prominence, they've seen the DPS increase from this from 7% to 15% due to C4 TAA. So as we're seeing right here, this is becoming a problem. C4 TAA stands for continuous 4-tick auto attack. So it's being, consistently used in that regard. And, they say the perhaps most worrying thing is that it's gone from something that the best players do to squeeze out more DPS to something that is required to join PVM teams. So it's already happening. And this also means that the magic style is dominating and being used in group content, and that 4-tick auto attacking is affecting the skill floor as well as the skill ceiling. And upping the skill ceiling and adding depth to the top is great, but not when it negatively affects the entry requirements for getting into PVM. So Jagex knows what's wrong here, and I think they waited until this point to fix it. Do you guys think the PVM community is going to accept the changes being made here?
I've already noticed that there's been quite an outcry. They're not happy about it. but I don't know.
Let me go get a fiddle so I can play him a little song, because I'm just going so sad that someone's taking away
world's smallest violin.
Yeah. I really don't have a big opinion on this, because I'm not elite enough to really care. And it kind of blows my mind that there's enough people that are doing this. Like, I just can't even imagine like doing it. But like, I see what you guys are saying about, like, you shouldn't have to be the best of the best just to try to learn a boss. It's not right. And
it's elitism.
It's elitism. Yeah. And I mean, we're never going to get that out. I mean, I've come to accept it,
yeah,
especially in certain ways. But should Jagex have done something about this when they knew about it? Well, yeah. I mean, this wasn't a feature. This wasn't supposed to happen.
It's an exploit.
Yeah, exactly. Is that the golden? Is that like the golden child or something that can't do any wrong or what? I'm confused here, because I feel like if this was in some other circumstance, you would have got slapped out immediately.
I'm gonna give you a prime example of this. We just got a Star Trek Online update on Tuesday. And it was determined that one of the new items that came from this update was making players practically unkillable. Players that should be killable, it was making them unkillable. And, 48 hours later, it has been nerfed by half. And there's been zero questions asked by the community if that is something that should have been kept in game. And now imagine Jagex leaving this in game and then nerfing it after. That's what Jagex is doing, when in reality, as soon as this arrived in, it should have just been popped out as soon as it was realized. So, but they do have a series of planned changes here, and here they are. The first is that you will no longer allow your auto attack swing to be reset or more accurately go backwards outside of legacy mode. If you perform an auto attack with a rate 6 weapon, so a two-hander, it will take 6 ticks before you can attack again. Regardless of whether you change your weapon, this prevents the most glaring bug with 4-tick auto attack, that you can perform auto attacks with staff damage at the same rate as a wand. And that's the exploit right there, is that you can have staff damage at the same rate you're using a wand, which is ludicrous now that you think about it in that perspective. The second change is that performing an ability will delay your auto attack swing by a minimum of 5 ticks. Just preventing the auto attack reset will not stop 4-tick auto attacking, only nerf its damage. You would still be able to delay by 4 ticks with a wand and then auto ability on the same tick. By delaying autos, by this you miss out on adrenaline and DPM if you delay for the auto, but it still allows back-to-back auto ability combos should you want to. I think that's a good fix.
Yeah. Sounds like it'll work to me.
And now they added a chapter at the end of this, adding more interactive combat in place of 4-tick auto-ticking. Auto-attacking, not auto-ticking. The idea of adding more interaction in the combat system for a small but notable DPS increase is not dead, and they want to add more interactivity to the combat system, and are interested on the player's ideas to how this would work. So basically, what's happened here is during the time since RuneFest, ModPy has put together some prototypes in his tap sessions on Thursdays for designing a replacement for this. So they range all the way from simple, that allow you to detach auto swing from abilities via manual input, all the way to crazy Osu-inspired overlay, which would allow you to auto attack via mechanical input. The initial prototyping is done, and he can reveal some of his ideas. So the idea behind this is that you would be swinging your own weapon in this regard. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, that seems
like that's not RuneScape.
That's strange.
And that's manual combat plus plus. We'll have manual plus plus.
That's
manual,
above and beyond
revolution,
what I feel like this game's limits should be within that regard.
Right. And I mean, it's going to be tailored down to the tick size as well, which is going to be, I think, disorienting for some people, because you can move your weapon and you can attack as quick as you can, but you are still at the mercy of the tick rate. So
yeah, that's what was sticking to me too. I'm like, but we're still on a tick rate, so what does it do? Like, what does it matter?
It's just a way to make things attack faster.
It's almost like it's just giving the illusion that it's adding more depth to the combat system when it's actually not.
And if you screw up with this, you're going to hurt your performance. So, now some options that have been prototyped for the various skills. For magic, it would be a new ability purchasable through the Shattered Worlds shop.
Oh, okay. Great.
This will be a new magic threshold with a dual wield requirement, and when activated, your basic abilities will reset your auto attack swing, allowing you to pop off spells in between your abilities. On top of this, you will gain a bonus damage on your auto attacks for each unique damaging spell you use while this buff is up. The passive effect will not be removed if you switch to a staff. The aim for this is to retain magic's abilities to utilize spells during combat, but to also actively reward more interaction during the uptime of the effect, requiring an adrenaline cost and linking it to an ability that allows us to fine-tune the cost and reward for this extra DPS. This also offers a magic ability alongside the existing ranged and melee abilities to fill out a full set of abilities from Shattered Worlds.
I mean, that's better, but
That's better, but this is for the elite. Whereas if you look at the melee abilities and the ranged abilities that come from Shattered Worlds, those are useful for anyone.
Yep, that was what I was going to say.
The idea of this ability is just, it doesn't seem like something I would even want to think of using. It just does not sound accessible or anything.
I think it should be a reward for, like, I don't know, monkey face punch. You're going to have to suffer to, like, get this. I'm sorry.
Like, this is a situation that was created by the inability to do something, the inability to lead, and the inability to have a backbone and get these changes out when they need to be out. That's what this is coming from. This magic ability is not needed. The ranged ability is not needed. The melee ability is not needed. Just remove 4-tick auto-attacking from the game. I think we can all agree that we already have some pretty obscene DPS in the game from high-tiered weapons and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I would say...
It should be...
I would say, remove 4-tick auto-attacking and let the people suffer 7 to 15% DPS fall off because of this. Because... there are new ranged weapons coming from Solak that we don't even know what the specials and passives are going to be on those. What if those offer an 8 to 12% boost for ranged?
Yeah, if people want to do switches like that and maximize every little bit, it shouldn't be exploiting a tick rate like that. It should be with what they did this week with, like, enchanted that criminal bolt tips.
Exactly.
Switch out your tips, switch out your bolts, stuff like that. It should be the equipment side, not some tick rate.
You want something that's going to,
it should be,
you want something that's going to
combat system.
You want something that's going to increase magic from Shattered Worlds. Here's what you do. You bring in a new ability from Shattered Worlds. And what this ability does, it's the threshold. It makes your magic attack a little bit faster, but it also adds a new effect to each of the various spells that you use, whether that be fire, earth, air, water, or the ancient magic spells. And what that does, what all these three abilities do from Shattered Worlds, is they increase your damage by 7 to 12%. There's a solution to this. It's available for everyone.
General.
And it uses existing mechanics in-game. And it doesn't need to be something that you're going to need to read the combat manual to know about what's happening here.
I, in general, just think this calls back to the fact that Jagex needs to stand their ground with stuff like this. They need to stop just sucking up to the player base and say, hey, this is something that should not be happening in this game, and we're not going to allow it.
Right.
Deal with it.
Because let's just read this again. When activated, your basic abilities will reset your auto attack swing, allowing you to pop off spells in between your abilities. On
That's
top of
basically
this,
4TAA.
On top of this, you gain a bonus damage on your auto attacks for each unique damaging spell you use while this buff is up. The passive effect will not be removed if you switch to a staff. Number one, this is a threshold ability from Shattered Worlds, whereas I recall the ranged one and the attack one, Tanis, I believe, are those thresholds, or are they basics?
No, I think they're basics.
Okay.
Assault and the Wound, I'm pretty sure it's a basic. Bladed Dive is threshold.
Okay. Well, yeah. Now put yourself in a situation. Someone who is leveling up doing Shattered Worlds, they get this ability, who is not in tune with the combat system. Are they going to know what this means?
I don't Probably even not. Know what this means.
Yes, yeah, same. Like, it feels to me like this ability is just 4-tick auto-attacking put into an ability.
Yep.
It essentially is, and that's just such a... I disagree with that.
Yeah.
That's a cop-out.
And now I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a minute, because I know there will be people who listen to this and will say you guys are anti-combat, anti-PVM. But recall what we spoke about half hour ago regarding the backriminal bolts. We are very happy that these bolts are in-game and they are going to increase range damage. We are all for increasing damage through normal means that are in-game. We are just not for increasing damage in-game through some weird mechanics. It's ludicrous. Let's get down to the ranged ones and see what the solutions are for those. So with Solak, a new ranged ability will be dropped. This will be a ranged ultimate for all ranged weapon styles. When activated, your global cooldown is reduced from 1.8 seconds to 1.2 seconds, so one tick for a short amount of time. The cooldown of this will be longer than Death Swiftness, since you are mobile during the uptime. And this isn't just an increase in damage, but it will an increase in adrenaline gain. Note, Revolution will not speed up while this buff is active. The aim for this is to bring back the feeling of two-tick abilities in a more structured and more balanced way. If done right, we expect you to alternate between this and death swiftness. So, Magic is getting the better update with this. Granted, you know, the global cooldown is reduced by one tick. That's great, and you're going to be able to do more damage. But the solution provided for Magic and range, I don't feel like they're equitable. They come from different sources. One is a threshold. One is an ultimate. One reduces the global cooldown by one tick, and the other allows you to get extra attacks in. And it's not just going to be one extra attack. So I don't get it.
It's just so inconsistent.
Well, and on top of that, like, look, I'm not anti-PVM. I am anti-elitist. I'll own that one. I am. But at the same time, like, why are they putting so... You could make that fix that Shane described easily. That could be done in a week or less. I don't know. I don't know development time. But what I do know is...
Removing if you are creating,
yeah, you could remove that, you know... quickly.
Probably,
I mean,
not
quick
quickly.
Enough. Well, but it's going to be quicker than making all these new abilities, yeah, right? So you're making all these new abilities for a tiny slice of not even the PVM community, but the most elite in the PVM community. So a few people are getting all these resources that could have went to everyone else for other content.
That's the power of a vocal minority.
Yeah, I don't. I definitely don't agree with those abilities.
And now for Blade. Now for Malie. Bladed Dive will be able to damage an opponent when used during global cooldown. This was something that was previously removed from the game, but with a change in approach to combat comes a change in our approach to this. You guys remember that patch note? I don't know if you remember that, Tannis, but I clearly remember this patch note. They prevented Bladed Dive from being used during global cooldown.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're putting it back in. I'm not familiar with what this ability is, so.
You can jump over stuff.
Yeah, you basically charge your opponent, and it's a basic ability.
Kind of like Barge, I guess.
Yeah, kind of, except it does more damage, and it's AoE for Malie.
Oh, okay.
Really good for, you know, abyssals and whatnot. But, you know, they will also be releasing our first update for weapon diversity. And all stabbing weapons, so daggers, short swords, spears, rapiers, will have a chance to not incur a global cooldown at all, which will allow you to instantly attack with another ability. Note, Revolution will not instantly trigger an ability if this effect is applied. We will also convert the Kopesh of Tupmakin to a stabbing weapon like its Tier 82 counterpart. And the aim, this is... to provide Malie a way to unlock it from the previous shackles of global cooldown and to reward those who are paying attention. So we have something here that everyone can access Malie if you're using a stabbing weapon. With ranged, we have something here that is going to be accessible if you are using the new ability from Solak, which is going to be quite expensive if you're buying it when it comes out. And with magic, you basically will need to know the combat system in and out in order to know when to attack. So we got three very different solutions to four-tick auto-attacking here. Granted, the initial problem is with magic, and they maintain that, but they are adding on to Malie and ranged to make it equitable. Part of me feels that this might be a little bit too powerful. All stabbing weapons will have a chance to have no global cooldown. That sounds a little bit maybe too powerful. We'll have to see what the slash and crush weapons get for this, but I mean, definitely raises more questions than it answers at this point. And I think anytime you're raising more questions than you're answering, you're not necessarily solving a problem in a good way.
No, the simplest solution is usually the best, right? I mean, just take it out. Why make it complicated?
Right. So if we remove this, we're affecting the very top end of the PVM community.
It just feels like they're desperately
between 7% and 15%.
But I don't really care about that because it shouldn't be in the game anyway. It's an exploit. We wouldn't be talking about some other exploit like this. That's what really irritates me.
Right.
And just the fact that all this new stuff is coming to replace that damage you got from an exploit.
Yeah.
It's almost like putting in these new abilities and all this stuff to counteract that is just almost damage control at this point. They just don't want to make people angry, but.
Well, you know what? We all end up having to get over things. Like, I mean, we all do. There's always stuff that we like and stuff that we don't, and stuff that affects one community doesn't affect the other as much. You take your lumps in this game. So I just wouldn't feel bad if they just take it out. It's an exploit, you know, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm personally wondering how many people are actually using this. You know, like, would we be affecting 100, 1,000, you know? Probably not 10,000, but, you know, what's the order of magnitude? Is it hundreds, thousands, pretty much everyone who does Elite PVM? How many? And, I mean, I don't know if Jagex would have metrics for that, to figure this out, how many of this is affecting. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you got to go based on numbers. So. Anyways. I have a feeling we stepped on the hornet's nest, but what was said needed to be said.
Agreed.
So. I'll just point
you
everyone.
Got some lotion.
Maybe.
I'm hurting.
Maybe.
I'm hurting. I'm going to get stung.
I'm just going to point everyone now to the tech Q&A stream that was on Twitch this week. Normally we do a overview of these streams, but you know, this one was a very visual stream. All the development tools for in-game in the developer console were being shown off, so there's really not much we can say about that. I would say that if you're at all interested in seeing what the console looks like, this is a stream you probably want to watch. But there was one definite thing that did come up there, and that was that, you know, they look at what's happening and they run various tests on, you know, tens of computers to ensure that RuneScape is running properly and whatnot, and they run automated tests for that, which is all fine and dandy. But with that, they also have a priority stream as to what is stuff that can be fixed and what should be fixed first. And one of the things that, you know, they highlighted as being a top priority to getting fixed was the disappearing items and whatnot, the item images this week. That was something that was high priority as an example they gave. But their priorities in terms of fixing things and adding on to the engine for the foreseeable future until mobile comes out is going to be getting mobile out the door. So that means that there are going to be potentially smaller bugs that are in game that, you know, could get reported and are not necessarily going to get fixed, because there are people who are working on mobile and the priority right now is to get RS Mobile out, unless, you know, there are major bugs that are impacting the game here. So that's something that I picked up from the stream and I wanted to highlight, because I think we all know it at this point that mobile is something that's going to truly define 2018. And if 2018 is successful for Jagex, but mobile is the priority internally, even to the point of pushing some minor bugs along the way. So,
which has probably always been the case, right? I mean, they're always prioritizing.
They came out and said it.
Right. I mean, they finally kind of gave us a look behind the curtain, but I mean, it's always kind of been that way.
Yeah.
I really liked this stream. It was really cool to watch through. I don't know if you guys know, but I'm actually a game design major.
Cool.
I'm in my fifth year right now. I'm about to graduate in the summer. So it was actually really cool to get to see, you know, what the tools they have for RuneScape is, and actually get a little bit of an in-depth look at that. I found that really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely more advanced than it was back in the olden days of RS2. I mean, they got lots of features in that toolkit that are things you would expect to find in AAA game titles, though we don't know it because the interface of RuneScape is kept really similar to what it's always been. So
yeah, one of the things that was kind of crazy to me to hear about with in that regard is their animation system. They used to literally have to animate face by face instead of rig things up. That, like, I'm a 3D artist. I do all the 3D modeling, all the environment art, all the animation stuff. That's my focus in my game design degree. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine face by face animation.
Yeah, and another thing they said, they were getting ready to get the animation team and the modeling team this year to move to Maya at some point.
Yeah, Maya is...
That's
Maya
the gold standard.
That's what I've learned.
But yeah, give that a watch if you're interested in that kind of thing. And we know Jagex's priorities right now are set for mobile. So let's just keep that in mind as we progress through the rest of the year. All right, just a reminder now that every Monday we do publish something called the Weekly Byte on YouTube. You can find that at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. Basically, what we aim to do with the Weekly Byte is we aim to provide a quick rundown of the week's updates and tell you what the most important and what the most important patch notes are for the week. So you can find that at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. And it's something we've been doing since the beginning of January, and I'm actually quite pleased where we're going with this. So if you guys like the Weekly Byte, make sure to check it out on YouTube, youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. And of course, like and subscribe. And I should also note that RSBNB Update, the full shows are published there every weekend as well on that YouTube channel. So. All right.
Yeah, share them with your friends.
Yeah, sharing on Twitter. Sharing is good. We like that. Mm-hmm. That gets us around. All right. So we're going to move on to questions right now. We got two of them this week. First one is from Trekkie. So with the new Aura interface, if you were to create a new Aura for the game, what would it do? Would it have different tiers? Would it be something useful like invincibility for the next 30 seconds or something fun like turn yourself into a rock? So what do you guys got for this?
Do we have any invention auras? I don't believe so.
I don't think we do. No.
No.
Well, I actually had an idea for an invention aura that had to do with disassembling. So something that gives you a certain percentage increase to get a more rare component when disassembling something, and that can scale with tiers.
Oh, that would be good.
And so say if you're like going for something like enhancing or, you know, whatever components aren't the common ones, that'd be very useful. I'd buy it.
Yeah, that'd be really good because, you know, nowadays we do have the auto disassemblers in our invention guilds with the machines. And the downside of that is that, you know, if you have a bulk collection of items, what incentive is there to manually disassemble now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So that's actually a really good one. I like that.
So yeah, that Lance. Would kind of feel that as well.
Right.
How about you, Tanis?
Man, I don't know. I'm going to go for, let's shoot for the stars here. Give me a Juju plus aura thing. You know, the one, like the perfect plus potions. Give me an aura that does that.
Oh, that'd be cool. Fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
It don't have to be for the whole 24 hours or whatever, but just like a regular aura duration, like an hour would be cool. You know what I mean? I'd be cool with that.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I am going to have to go with something in one of my two wheelhouse skills, and that's farming or herblore. And, you know, we already have a fairly decent farming aura. I would like to see the farming auras increased to an hour long instead of 20 minutes long because, you know, 20 minutes is really only good for one cycle of a herb. For example, or it's not even going to touch your trees. So I think increasing that to an hour with a 3-hour cooldown would probably be a interesting thing to do if I could do something with it. Though I know there are people out there who like it with the hour cooldown because it allows you to use it for each herb run. So maybe not. But in the case of maybe not, I would like to have something for the herblore skill that increases my chance in addition to everything else we have in game of making 4-dose potions.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That would be really nice.
Because, I mean, we can stack it, I believe, with the well and the outfit, but there's really not much else to it.
Especially since 4-dose potions have more of a use nowadays for herblore with the...
Exactly.
With
crystal.
Crystal flasks.
And, exactly. And, I mean... like there's only so much you can do with that skill because it's kind of limited in that regard. So I can see how that might be overlapping, but that's what I would like to see. So
I've got one other idea. I like the idea, and this is Dungeoneering, sorry, Shane, but I like the idea of the Daemonheim aura. Maybe come up with some other Dungeoneering auras.
Oh, that'd be good. Because there's only the one right now, right?
Yeah, and you can take it into the dungeon with you and everything.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be good.
It just has some passives on it. It's not like you have to activate it or anything like that. Like, I could think of a number of different things you could do with that in Daemonheim.
Yeah, did you guys know that the best fishing XP in the game could potentially come from Dungeoneering?
Yeah, I've actually done that for a bit.
Yeah.
I love doing that. It's fun. It's fishing, but it has some exploration added into it as well.
That's kind of like the old way, right?
That's the old best way of method. Doing it. The, yeah. A newer way of doing it is the arc. But yeah. All right. Thank you, Trekkie, for that one. All right. Now we're about to embark on another philosophical discussion here. This one's from Parnassius. Hey guys, a discussion topic for you guys this week. With RS Mobile on the horizon, Jagex looks to still be sticking with its plan to release old school RS before the flagship game RS3. While I understand the graphics and conversion to mobile is much simpler, I cannot fathom the reason for this decision. Surely as a company, you would want your flagship product, the one that brings in the majority of your profits, to be the one focused on. If not released first, at least done simultaneously, so that it has a chance to thrive and bring those new players in and be able to convert them to be profitable players. With the lack of microtransactions on old school RS, it just seems to be bad business. How do you feel about this? Perfectly honest, in my opinion, it just seems that the CEO, Mod Pips, must have a real love for old school RS, which, let's face it, is just a Jagex certified private server over the actual main game. I have heard several people who have come back upon hearing the mobile release and have signed up for old school RS simply because they know that it is coming first. I don't think that Jagex fully understands this, and that trying to convert those players to RS3, where they will need to begin all over again, will be a difficult, if not impossible, task. Can't wait to hear your thoughts. As always, happy scaping, Pern.
So that's a great, great question. You know, I can see so many reasons for each way, but let's face it. As long as Jagex gets, if they get a new membership, they don't care if it's old school or RS3. Membership's membership. Like, it's same price, right?
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, it is one price for both.
Right. So, and let's look at, like, look, I would much rather see RS3 come out. It makes sense to put your flagship product out. But let's just think about some of the reasons. Like, one, it is probably easier. But more importantly, it's simple. That is simple RuneScape. Easy for a new person to come in and figure it out. How hard would it be for a new player to come in on mobile and learn how to play ToggleScape? Right? So there's a reason for old school. That makes sense. Plus, I don't know if this is true. I'm going to make some assumptions here. We know what that means. But I think the demographic that plays RS3 probably tends to be a little bit older than the demographic that plays old school, which I think is a more likely demographic to play mobile. That's, like I said, that's full of all kinds of assumptions, and I could be wrong, but that's just kind of what I'm thinking of. Maybe that's some of the thinking behind it.
All right. You know, I have to agree with Parnassius here. You need to make a statement. You know, I have long said that half of declaring a victory is not only if you manage to ship the actual product, it's that if you manage to message it properly. I would like to take everyone back to, I believe, would be 2009. Or probably 2009 or 2010. Apple's iPhone 4 had just come out. Do you guys remember what the issue with the iPhone 4 was?
Something with the antenna, wasn't it?
That's right. The iPhone 4 was a glass-backed iPhone with a metal rim around the enclosure. And as we all know, you cannot turn a piece of glass into an antenna. So what they had to do is they had to make the metal banding around the casing of the phone, the antenna. And this had the unfortunate side effect that if you wrapped your whole hand around that phone, it would stifle the signal. They did fix this in later revisions of the device. And, you know, this was back when Steve Jobs was at his prime, and he said, "You're holding it wrong." That was his response to a reporter's question on the topic. I mean, and you might think of this as an asshole thing to say, but he said, "You're holding it wrong." And the discussion in the tech media after that turned away from the fact the signal wasn't working on the iPhone 4 until they could issue out a patch that would actually fix it in software and later fix it in subsequent revisions of the device, to the discussion became one about how to hold iPhones successfully. So if you have the right kind of messaging, and even if your product has a huge design flaw like the iPhone 4 did, it can still sell, and people are going to be talking about something else entirely. And that is what this all comes down to here. It's the optics of executing a release and executing a strategy here. Jagex doesn't have that right now. You know, you release old school first. What does that say? What are people going to be talking about on the gaming websites? Look at the old headlines school when it comes out. Mm-hmm. And we need to look objectively at the games and realize that there are people who like old school, and that's fine. We're not them, but
no.
Which game has the longer lifespan ahead of it? RuneScape 3. It just feels like it's being developed by a more professional studio, given, I mean, I say that given we had the issues of the achievement system in Shattered Worlds last year.
Well, yeah, but still.
But it comes down to optics. And I mean, people know old school is coming first, which is unfortunate that Jagex said that. And
I feel like this is in general just a big missed opportunity for them.
Bingo. And, you know, I'm going to say, pull another page from Star Trek Online here. This past Tuesday, we got the 8th anniversary storyline mission for Star Trek Online. That mission was finished, and that storyline was finished back in August internally. And they waited until February to release it because that was the right time to release it. So you can finish old school next month, and you wait 3 months until after RuneScape 3 gets out on mobile to release old school. There needs to be a product design and release strategy with RuneScape.
I just don't see how they're doing this with the potential they have for profits with microtransactions in RuneScape 3. Mobile's got some power behind it. That market's huge. They could tap into that. And they've got all these different things you can do for microtransactions in RuneScape 3. That doesn't exist at all on old school, except bonds.
Yeah,
like that could be a major profit for them. But
there's
that's
a portion of Chinese investors for Jagex, and Jagex has been long wanting to get into the Chinese market. How do you get into the Chinese market? You get into the Chinese market on mobile, and you offer microtransactions.
Exactly. Whoa. People would be all over all the cosmetics.
That would be the only argument that could possibly sway them, because I feel like they're coming. I almost feel like
I actually got a better option that would sway them to do it first. You want to hear it?
Okay. Yeah.
You release RuneScape 3 mobile first. You release it, you know, in the UK, Europe, Americas, and China. If they can get their Chinese investors somehow to get that game into China. And what you do is you set up a specific Chinese server for RuneScape. And this specific Chinese server is going to be completely isolated. And what you do is you sell everything for real world money on that specific Chinese server. And yes, it would be isolated from the rest of RuneScape. And the Chinese market will accept something like that. And they will buy that stuff. Now just imagine the kind of money that brings in for Jagex. Like, basically what I'm saying is I'm saying to offer tier 90 and tier 92 weapons for sale in game in China.
Oh, I think people would freak out.
But it's just going to be isolated. Yeah. It would just have to be isolated to a Chinese server. There would be no interaction.
You're talking about
the RuneScape community.
Yes, there's no nuance on Reddit. What do you mean?
They would use that as a ton of fuel to just bash on Jagex.
It's the option if you want to make a lot of money quickly.
But yeah. Shane, if they made a lot of money quickly, how long until it was brought to us?
And see, that's,
I don't even want that idea floating around their head, to be honest.
And see, that's the thing. And, you know,
it's a slippery slope.
That's something I said. And, you know, there might be people that would blame me if that would ever happen. I don't think it'll happen because that's, you know, I don't think there's anything that egregious in the North American sphere for microtransactions. So.
Yeah, no, I don't think that would probably be something that would break the community to pieces. I don't think we could handle that. I don't know if Jagex cares enough about which one is seen as its flagship, because I feel like they're almost looking at us as like we're their kids. They can't love one of us more than the other, and they're just. You know, and it's the same price no matter which game. I would put out RS3 first because RS3 looks better, but I could see it like I said.
And it's a question. It's
harder to learn.
I mean, unless there are metrics we're not aware of, and old schools played more than an RS3, and there are old school players that say that, but I personally don't believe the numbers that they're putting up.
See, the only thing I could relate that to is, man, old school kills RS3 on Twitch. Like, it kills it. It's not even close. And that's what I'm saying about the demographics. They're younger streamers. They're younger viewers.
How you feel about that, Zant?
Yeah, I can agree with that. And it's the kind of crowd that, you know, sticks to a lot of things that the younger crowd also does. Like, all the new memes and stuff like that and things that get pretty offensive. It's that kind of crowd that has that amount of toxicity to it. And when I stream RuneScape on there, I get that crowd coming to my chat and it goes bad sometimes. Like, I have to ban some people in my chat sometimes. And yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's crazy.
I'm just remembering.
That's when they're setting off the auto mod and everything.
I'm just remembering an update from last year. I think I know what crowd you're talking about. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right. I won't go there. I'm sorry. But,
yeah. The RuneScape crowd on Twitch, every time I stream RuneScape 3, which it's not often, but I always get people saying they wish there's more RuneScape 3 streamers.
Because, you know, I get that too, and yeah. But yet I don't have a huge audience when I do. I mean, and the only RuneScape I stream is 3. But
yeah,
just, you know, but the problem. I mean, this is totally off base, but it's just you have some really, like I said, you'll have some high level PVM, and that's
about it, really.
That's about it, yeah. That's like, really about it,
like. When I stream it, people always say just how nice it is to just have a chill RuneScape 3 stream. Like, I just do my dailies and Slayer and whatever. I don't do PVM on stream. It's like, but people like that. They just want someone to talk about the game with, you know? It's not even that they want to see this crazy elitist stuff and, you know, not PVM. They just like the fact that there are RuneScape streamers that exist. Mm-hmm. RuneScape 3 streamers that exist.
Yep. And in terms of audience, you know, the OS crowd. It's a lot bigger crowd. So I don't know if Jagex is looking at that or what they're looking at.
I don't know. And I mean, RS3, I feel like is the flagship. I feel like it is the flagship that gets the majority of the development time.
Oh yeah.
That's 100%.
And I mean, I think what needs to be done is which of these is going to get more media coverage when it comes out first.
It depends on how they attack it. Like exactly. they could completely tap into the nostalgia factor with old school. They could completely do that. But then they could also kind of sell it if they did RuneScape 3 first. You remember RuneScape? Well, look what this game is now, and it's on mobile. You know? And put pictures of RuneScape 3 or whatever. Show them what this game is. And that could be like, you know, get a lot of people who played this game when they were younger and wanted to try it out, even like now that it is on mobile.
Yeah.
It's more accessible. It's like, wow, that game's come a long way.
Yeah. I feel like RS3 is the flagship and it should be first for that reason.
Exactly.
But whichever is going to get the most media coverage is what they're going to do first. And I think based on our discussion here that we had regarding the streamers, and it's good we talked about that, how it's primarily old school. I think Jagex might feel that there's more media coverage to be had with old school going first.
The power of content creators like that is immense. There are some big names who play old school RuneScape on Twitch. Like, I'm talking several tens of thousands of viewers. Single streams that get that many viewers. It's crazy. And RuneScape 3, you ever go on there, like, biggest stream you see is, you know, a couple hundred.
And not all of the OS streamers show cleavage. Not all of them.
Not all of them.
Isn't that against Twitch rules?
If you're little, but if you're big, you can do what you want.
Yeah.
Mod Mark got the got the Jagex stream. Yeah,
this is a topic for another podcast.
All right. Well, yes. That being said, if you want to send in your own question or discussion topic, you can email questions at rsbnb.com. You can also call or text 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And finally, you can leave us a DM or add us on Twitter at rsbnb. Okie dokie. So, tech news. Xbox Game Pass. This is going to be a 6-month subscription available for $59.99. It's basically subscribing games, as we've talked about before, with PlayStation and NVIDIA, except now it's coming for the Xbox One. And these are going to be grade A titles, and they're going to be launching with Rare's multiplayer adventure Sea of Thieves. Other exclusives like Crackdown 3 are also going to be there as well. It's going to be $9.99 a month otherwise, and it's going to they have more than 100 titles right now, and more than 70 games have been added since then. So,
and on launch day, you're getting exclusives on launch day. That is nuts. I mean, think about it. You could have been playing what was that, Horizon Zero Dawn on launch day. $10 a month. I mean, if you're an Xbox person, two games a year, you paid for your subscription. So it's pretty cool. Plus, Xbox has the ability you can stream that to your computer.
Yeah.
You got
PC
gaming.
Except the downside of that, you know, with the streaming side is if you're playing something like a shooter, you're not going to get the best performance because it's over the network and there's going to be some input lag with that. But I mean, for single player games,
you're
fine. This
is a network type thing. This isn't just literally $10 a month you get the games.
Yeah.
It's streamed.
Yeah. Essentially, okay. This is, this is like Netflix for.
Gotcha.
For Microsoft.
Yeah, so these are actual games.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually amazing to see Microsoft doing this. And, you know, this could potentially be the next big step in gaming. See gaming move to a subscription model like the music industry did. I don't know how I feel about that, though. I mean,
you know, but for us PC gamers, we kind of have to deal with that a lot anyway, because when you buy something from Steam, you don't have the game. You have the license to play the game. So it's not really that different, only it would be a lot cheaper.
Yeah, for $9.99 a month. Though,
Yeah, everything's been moving to the subscription things nowadays. It's honestly just a matter of time before it hit gaming. And this seems to be the start of it.
And, I mean, exclusives as well, though.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when you factor that in over the year, that's, you know, two games a year. That's a good price.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft doesn't, you know, they've been knocked in the last few years for not having as many exclusives.
Yeah. And that's the key here. All future right. Xbox One exclusive games from Microsoft Studios will be incorporated into this.
But I do think they're going to be increasing that a little bit. And I'm not a, I don't know. They do have franchises, you know, they'd have their Forza and Halo. And, like I said, Horizon is probably going to turn into a franchise, I would expect. So they do have their titles, you know.
Horizon is an Xbox exclusive. I thought that was PlayStation.
No, is Forza it? Horizon. No.
Oh, I thought you meant Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, I was talking about both, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I just got confused there. For a second, I was like, wait a minute.
My mind went to Forza Horizon.
Yeah. That's what I had was reading in their release. But I don't know. I think it's cool. I mean, yeah. I'm all in favor of it. I tried, like I said, I tried the PlayStation subscription a while back, and I didn't have input lag. I mean, I was playing fighting games and stuff, and I didn't have it didn't lag. So, I mean, maybe that, you know, that's all about your internet connection too. But
I
think it's good.
That's streaming a game. As far as I'm actually concerned, these are actually downloading the games to your Xbox, right?
I was under the impression that it was streaming them.
Yeah, it's streaming, I'm pretty sure. Game Pass.
Okay.
Streaming base, yeah.
Interesting. Let's see.
Could be wrong. I
didn't really look into this one.
Yeah, it doesn't really say on here.
No. But, I mean... You know, if I think the issue here is that the question everyone's going to be asking about this is, are there enough games on here for you to purchase this and not worry about purchasing your other games, right?
I think it comes down to whether you care about the exclusives or not.
That's right.
It comes down to your own personal gaming preferences, whether it's worth it or not.
That's right. Yeah, it's a catalog of games. Let's see. They would be made available through backwards compatibility, similar to 360s, and then they would go onto Game Pass. Sea of Thieves, let's see, added upon launch. And this is basically similar to Xbox One's existing EA Access video game subscription and the PlayStation Now service offered by Sony. Right, so okay. You do actually get the games here because it's like EA Access where you're not just streaming, you know, a copy of the game over the internet. You're actually downloading the game. So, you know, you're getting actual games with this, which is different than PlayStation Now, which is a cloud gaming service.
Yeah, that's what I.
And EA Access is you're getting actual games. So this is closer to EA Access.
Wow, well, that makes it even better then.
Yeah. And unlike PlayStation Now, in which the player streams the games to their device, Xbox Game Pass allows the player to download the full game to the console. So it's a question of, you know, are the Microsoft Studio games what you want to play? And if they are, you can maintain the subscription. So that'll be the question everyone will ask. Mm-hmm. All right, our second piece of tech news is that Microsoft has started selling their Surface laptop with Windows 10 Pro pre-installed. Previously, you only used to be able to get the Surface laptop with Windows 10 S. And what Windows 10 S was a streamlined version of the operating system that had apps that could only come from the Microsoft Store, whereas Windows 10 Pro is what we're running on our computers when we play video games. So the commercial version of this laptop is going to have a $200 price hike over the existing Surface laptop, and it'll have 8 gigabytes of RAM compared to the 4 gigabytes of RAM that the Surface laptop has with Windows S on it, Windows 10 S on it. So, I mean, it's a pretty good laptop for what you're getting here. And you're only paying an extra $200 for this to have the full version of Windows 10 out there. Now, you might be wondering, why is this important and why is this good? Well, there's long been a gap in the, let's just call the premium laptop market, because Apple, of course, has the MacBooks, right? Microsoft never really sold anything themselves that gives you that guaranteed Windows experience, because as we all know, if you buy something from Dell or HP, you need to remove all the loaded garbage that comes on it. So with that being said, Microsoft is putting out a good price point here for an actual laptop that will give people an optimal Windows 10 experience, which is something, quite frankly, that they've needed to do for years, and it's about time that they've done so. So, and you get more RAM than you get with the one for $200 less. So I can see this being very popular in the upcoming back to school year. So,
This is an actual just like standard laptop.
Oh yeah, it's an actual standard laptop.
So it's not like the Surface Book that's got that weird hinge on it.
No.
It's not the tablet hybrid at all.
You know, it's a real laptop. And it, of course, you know, is going to be able to run every application that you have, because that's the idea behind what running Windows 10 Pro instead of Windows 10 S. So,
yeah.
And I mean, you can do a lot with this. And I mean, they actually have a really decent look to these laptops as well. So,
yeah. I've got myself a Surface Pro 4 and I really like it.
Right. So this is,
you know, a great device.
This is one step away from it here.
Yeah.
It's
kind of the same deal, but with a more traditional laptop experience, which that's good. I think buying this kind of thing straight from Microsoft is a good thing. It makes it so you can, you know, get a laptop and have to remove all the crapware on it, and just overall better experience. Yeah. And it gives them their own first party product.
And I mean, we already had the option out there. If you buy the Surface laptop, you have until March 31st to switch to Windows 10 Pro, but you can build that in right now, you know, for a modest increase in the price, and also getting better hardware with it as well. So Microsoft really has hit the nail on the head with this, the Surface laptop. And, you know, I think if I needed a Windows laptop, that's probably what I would get if it wasn't for gaming. But I mean, when you have a gaming PC, you don't really need a laptop for gaming, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just to give everyone an idea here, you can have a Core i5 or a Core i7. So those are, you know, modern chips. They all come with SSDs, so it's going to be blazing fast. Intel integrated graphics, that's going to be enough for what you're doing. You might be able to play RuneScape on it, but you're not going to be able to play.
I can play RuneScape on my Surface just fine.
Oh, there you go.
So. Yeah, it works just fine. Sometimes I'll lay in bed and play it just on the touchscreen.
Nice. So you already have RuneScape Mobile in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
It's already got mobile.
All righty. So that's the Surface laptop, now configurable with Windows 10 Pro from Microsoft. And we finally got a release date for Apple's HomePod, and that is, of course, their competitor to, you know, the Google Assistant and Amazon Echo. So HomePod will launch on February 9th, available to start with in the US, the UK, and Australia. And it's going to have a very impressive price tag on it. $349.
Oh, only $200 more than its competitors, because it's got an Apple on it.
Yeah. That's
only
right.
$320 more than an Echo Dot.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez.
Apple, of course, positions this as, you know, being a premium speaker that's going to be able to play your music and sound really good with it. They want you to use Apple Music. They want you to use Siri. And they also want you to access all of your iOS features with it as well, that you normally do with Siri and whatnot. So $349 in a market that's already saturated with these devices from Google and Amazon and others.
I just don't see what are they offering that their competitors don't, that justifies the price tag. I mean, I guess this is any Apple product, but still, I want to know.
Better speaker. It sounds better.
Yeah, better speaker. And I mean, Siri would also need to be able to be better as well. But I don't think it's like, granted, you know, if you live in the US, you guys can do this. You can ask Siri to read you the news right now in the US.
Well, but I can ask my Dot that every day. I get a little briefing. It's kind of like personal assistant. Right? I'm like, hey, give me my briefing for the day. And it does.
Right. And see, that's the thing. Apple is still playing catch up on the software side with this. And the thing that they're, you know, banking people will, I think, buy on is the fact that you can, in effect, create a whole home experience with this. They say that a software update arriving later this year will enable users with more than one HomePod to play music throughout their homes with multi-room audio via its AirPlay 2 protocol. So not only do they want you to buy one, they want you to buy two.
Buy one for every room in the house. You know, you got to have one for the bathroom. Got to have one for the closet. Got to have one for the bedroom.
Yeah. I honestly don't see how this is going to work unless Siri gets a major software upgrade with this year's iOS. And beyond that, it's a premium product in terms of its speaker quality. So,
as someone who hasn't even really bitten into this kind of market yet, I don't have any of these devices whatsoever.
Right. Same.
I just don't see why I'd get the Apple one over, you know, like an Echo Dot. You know, Echo Dot, $30. There you go.
Well, I trust Google more than I trust Amazon. So, you know.
Yeah, to a certain degree, yeah. But I just don't see the point of getting this HomePod. It's too expensive.
Yeah. Launch date for France and Germany will be in the spring, and dates for other countries, including Canada and New Zealand, have not been provided yet. So, yeah, there we go. I honestly don't see this going anywhere, and I like Apple products, so I'm being completely honest with you guys on that. So,
they should have been the first to have this if they were still the visionary company that they'd always been.
Definitely.
I guess if there is one thing to take away from this, this will probably integrate very well with other Apple devices, like a lot of Apple's peripherals do.
Yeah, and exactly, that's the point. You know, if you have an Apple ecosystem, you're going to integrate very well on this. But I mean, who uses Siri for performing tasks?
Exactly.
It's not a Google Assistant or a Cortana even, or an Echo. It's just not at that level yet, which is unfortunate. Anyways,
no, my Dot will tell me jokes. She tells me how she's feeling, you know, and like,
you know, a whole conversation.
So yeah, you know.
Yeah. All right.
It's like buying a friend.
That's right. I actually want to try something right now, and you guys might get a kick of this. Hey Siri, what do you think? No. Hey Siri, what do you think of the Apple HomePod? That doesn't even know about its own products.
Wow.
Hey Alexa, what do you think about Apple's HomePod?
Are we waiting?
Welcome to the Alexa Prize, a university competition.
Okay, well, they're both stupid, so Alexa, shut up. Stop. Well, we just proved the technology needs to come a little bit further.
We don't have a Google one here, unfortunately. All right. Well, moving on to other things now. So our magic skill of the month for January is progressing. Sorensen 57 is now in the lead. We had a lead change since last week. Sorensen 57 shot up from third place all the way to first with 27.5 million magic XP gained so far this month. Parnassius is in second place with 14.5 million XP, and X-Blades is in fourth with 8.4 million experience gained. Wow. Indeed. Amazing uptick there from the Sorensen. And yeah. I should also mention that the February skill of the month is construction. So if you're at all interested in competing in the construction skill of the month, I mean, who doesn't like burning money, right?
Yeah, burning money on double XP though. That's a good one.
Double XP weekend. Yeah, so we'll just have to wait and see if we get any action before double XP weekend on this one. Who knows? But if you want
to finally have a reason to train some construction,
If you want to sign up, rsbnb.com/skotm. You need an RSBNB form account to verify your identity, just as a check. Sign up if you want to compete. rsbnb.com/skotm. All right, so on to achievements we go. So we got I Defend with 99 Fishing on the 24th of January. Also CatMac with 120 Invention. VSS with 99 Smithing on the 23rd. Then moving on to the 22nd, we have Eric's with 99 Invention. Zookeeper 53 with 99 Mining. Ally the Wise with 99 Summoning. Antivistic with 99 Firemaking. And Ra Rakti with 120 Dungeoneering on the 22nd as well.
On the 21st, we had Chublet with 99 Fishing. Also, 99 Defense by Eric's. And Row of Snow had 99 Invention also on the 21st. And on the 20th, we had Desmo360 with 99 Fletching and Warrock with 120 Dungeoneering.
Nicely done, everyone.
Very good. And on the 18th, we had CatMac again with a 99 Slayer. CatMac with 99 Ranged and Zookeeper 53 with 99 Smithing. So nice achievements, everybody.
Nicely done.
I like seeing the Dungeoneering.
Yeah. Dungeoneering. It's a thing.
That's a lot of dailies.
All right, time for pick of the week. I believe, Zant, you wanted to share something with us. What do you got?
All right, so my pick is this little game that came out late 2016, I believe, but it's recently had a re-release back in October on the Nintendo Switch, and that is Stardew Valley. So Stardew Valley, it's this little pixel art farming simulator game, kind of like a cross between Harvest Moon and Animal Crossing is how I could describe it. And a lot of people do see it as a spiritual successor to the Harvest Moon series. Which is a pretty old series that was back on GameCube and some of the earlier Nintendo consoles. But it's a great little game. It's day-based, so when you start the game, each day is a certain amount of time, and you have time to manage your farm, build buildings, interact with villagers, and the depth in this game, for what it is, it's incredible. And I think the really crazy thing for me with this game is it was developed entirely by one person, a Concerned Ape. A single guy developed this entire game, and it's crazy. But I definitely think it's worth the play, especially if you have a Nintendo Switch. This game originally came out on PC, Xbox One, and I believe PS4 also. But on the Nintendo Switch, I think this game works really well being able to play it in handheld. I love just laying in bed and playing it. And it's one of those games that's really cozy. It's got really good, nice, mellow music to it. And it's really relaxing to play. Something nice to do after, you know, long day of school or work or whatever. But yeah, give it a try. It's only $15 as well.
You know, it looks like it's from a different era, but I'm suspecting just like RuneScape, that's the charm with it, right?
It is. And
yeah,
its art style is it's such a great charm that it has. And you know, even though it does seem like it's from a different era, the other elements of it are very, very so in line with more modern games. Like the stories with these characters in the game, they go pretty deep. The systems for farming and even some, like there's some combat systems and stuff in this game. And they've got some depth to them. And it's a lot to keep you occupied. And oftentimes if you're playing this game, you'll find yourself playing it and then realize it's 5 a.m.
Yeah, this definitely looks like something that would be great on a handheld.
Yes.
Switch the only handheld platform?
It's the only handheld that it's available for.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I originally bought it on PC and I loved it, but I still bought it again for the Switch because I wanted it in handheld. So I think it definitely shines well on the Nintendo Switch.
Excellent. Yeah. I never heard of the game, but I mean, it looks.
Oh, Shane, really?
No,
a farming game.
Like farming, dude.
No, I've never heard of it.
It's like really complex too. Like it looks so simple, but it ropes you in. Like it's a good game, man. It's a really good game.
It's not hard to understand either. And it's got a great learning curve to it. And it's also got some depth with the relationships you can build with the characters in the game. You can marry villagers. You can, like, regardless of gender, you can marry someone. You can.
You gotta butter them up first, though. Maybe.
Yeah, you gotta butter them up. Yeah, it's kind of funny. You gotta give them a whole bunch of gifts and talk to them daily, and you can have kids in the game. It's a life simulator.
Interesting. All right. Well, I might have to give that a look since you guys did mention the farming aspect of it.
He's gonna get addicted to it.
Oh yeah,
it's one of those games that will.
So much with your farm too. Oh man.
Oh my god. Yeah. Yeah, you could do so much. It's like if you're the kind of person that likes those games that let you put your creativity to the test and kind of just build something, this is that kind of game.
Yeah, it looks actually really good. Despite the graphics of it, some people might not like that, but hey, it actually looks good. It's also available on the Xbox.
Yep.
Yeah, though it seems like handheld is the platform you would want to play this on.
However, handheld does not have mods. The PC version does have mods.
Who needs mods?
There's some cool stuff. There's some cool stuff, though.
Who needs mods?
And I still think the PC version is still relevant due to that. But yeah, as far as consoles go, Switch is the console to get it on, if you got one.
Alrighty, sounds good. That's Stardew Valley, stardewvalley.net. Thank you, Zent. So what have we been up to in RS? What you been up to this week, Tannis?
You know, a little this, a little that. I've been doing divination prepping for double XP weekend, just to get some charge packs, but I also actually sold some, and like I sold some for like 20 mil, so that was cool.
Whoa, how many for 20 mil?
200. Yeah,
damn, so, those are around 100k now.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Well, I know what I'm doing.
Great money if you, I know what I'm right, doing. If you got the time. No, so yeah, I mean,
we get some simple parts.
Yeah, simple parts are easy to get. Acadia logs, I think that's still the best, right?
Yeah, but you have to cut them and stuff. You know, I mean,
I've just been.
I guess if you had quarters.
For whatever reason, I have like 15,000 U logs in my bank, so I've just been hacking through all those to get them simple parts.
You need to get yourself a disassembly machine.
Yeah, disassembler.
Yeah, I've been using.
I just grab them from the kingdom up there, throw those in maples, and then
them
in there, and I never even have to. I don't have to do anything really. So,
and I haven't touched kingdom in a long time.
Yeah. Nice.
A little of that, and then I think I did do a few Slayer tasks this week, just to check out the aura bag and stuff like that.
All right, sounds good. How about you, Zant? What have you been up to, RS, otherwise, games?
It's been a pretty quiet week for me in RuneScape. My semester started Monday, so I've been kind of busy in that regard, keeping up with that in the streams. But past few weeks, just been on quite a variety of skilling. Been doing some random fire making and fletching when I get the time while doing homework or whatever. But other than that, past few weeks, doing some Slayer. I think the main thing with me with Slayer that I wanted to get one of the combat pets. And I actually did. I ended up getting the strength pet. So,
oh, good. Nice. How long did that
I
take?
I have the, since I started playing again, I want to say roughly 2 million experience.
That's actually really good. That's really good.
Yeah, that's really good. I was really happy with that. So now I have a kangaroo with boxing gloves following me around. So, nice. Gotta love it. A little bit of dungeoneering, slowly pushing to 120, currently 117. I'll probably do a lot of that over the double XP weekend. I want that cape so bad.
And also 117 Dungeoneering is effectively a requirement for the Master Quest Point cape, if that's ever something you want to do.
Eventually. Yeah, the plan is to go for that stuff at some point. But I want to get my 120 Dungeoneering, then slowly work towards max cape when I get the time. But yeah, I've been playing this game very casually recently. Just a couple farming runs every now and then as well.
Excellent. All right. As for me this week, working on invention, aura bag, I checked out some of the bolts, but of course I don't have the range level to use them. I am really focused on getting that level 96 invention, actually. So just been doing a lot of fishvention with that rather than the combat style. Starting out, maxing out the arc daily, and then if there's still time, don't hate me for it, waterfall fishing. For invention's sake.
I'll probably do waterfall fishing at some point, so I'm not going to shame you for it.
Yes. Waterfall fishing's great. I think Shane's getting, he's real close to getting the bug. He's going to get the maxing bug. It's going to bite you.
It's going to happen this year without me wanting to. I'm around 90K away from level 99 mining just from doing my daily potion flasks. I'm 1.1 million away from level 99 ranged. I'm level 98 slayer. So
I've been intentionally.
You're going to get the bug where you're just like, oh, no. I want it.
No, it's not happening.
It's going to happen. You know it.
It's going to happen.
Well, I'm not going to let it happen. It's just going to eventually get there. You
see,
know?
What amazes me is how you're about 99K away from a 99 and you just don't finish it. I'd get that thing in about 2 hours. I'd just go do it.
See,
I'm like that.
The reason I'm not doing mining is because I had the idea of waiting until the mining and smithing update came out to do them both.
I had that idea as well. I'm actually like intentionally putting off my mining and smithing training until then. I'm about 90,
exactly.
91 in both.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm putting that off because I want to experience that. I want to experience
right.
that training.
But I need to maintain my daily crystal flasks coming in because that's how I reduce costs with Herblore.
Mm-hmm. Man, I've been forgetting about those.
Yeah. Anyways, I believe that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. So thank you both for being here. I think we had some good, honest discussions and some good counseling sessions, let's just say, for the combat types out there and for the mobile types out there. So hopefully that will go over well. And if not, you can send your hate mail in next week. And if you're wondering if you're wondering how to do that, just contact us on Twitter at RSBNB. Or send those
or
questions
leave it
in
on,
to questions at rsb.com. No, leave it there, actually.
leave it there, right? Yeah.
Or you can leave a voice question.
Yeah, though we like hearing voice. And, you know, it's good to have discussions even if people disagree with you, I think. So we like questions and whatnot. So send those in. And as I also mentioned, the YouTube channel, every Monday, the weekly bite goes up there, youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. And the full podcasts are there as well. Like, subscribe for those to automatically come into your YouTube feed. And I guess finally I can say Friends Chat Bits Bytes as well. We are always in there. I'm always in there. And we've been seeing a steady influx of newish people coming in. So join us in there if you're a listener of the podcast and you want to chat with us or just play with us. So until then, we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.